This workshop speaker meeting on the topic of parenting and recovery, and we have asked Christina and Todd to speak. I would like to introduce our first speaker, Christina.
Hi, I'm Christina, I'm an addict. I have an extreme amount of anxiety because parenting in recovery goes really deep for me. And I thought to myself, how could I possibly share a message today? Because the truth is that I don't have the answer for how to parent in recovery successfully. I do the best that I can every day, and I stay clean, and I just kind of roll with it, you know? This week in particular has been a really interesting week and has caused me to really dive deep into the specifics of what really happened with my child and I, and how those things have long-lasting effects on her and me and my family, my immediate family and my extended family. I had my daughter Jill when I was 21 years old. I was not in the total thick of addiction at that time. She didn't come out substance exposed, but I did use while I was pregnant. And then when she was born, I gradually exposed her to the life of addiction. You know, she suffered the side effects of my disease. I drug her into trap houses, and you know, there were needle caps in her toys and, you know, various different things. You know, she was exposed to the life. But that doesn't mean that it was my intent to harm her or neglect her. I had a problem, and I didn't know what to do about it at the time. But one thing I knew for sure was that I loved her with everything. With everything in my being. And, you know, the side effects of my disease were that Jill was taken from me. She was taken from me in the most traumatic of ways that I can possibly explain. You know, she was yanked out of my arms like a Lifetime movie, and it was sudden, it was abrupt, and I didn't know what to do with that. I didn't know what to do with those feelings. And the truth is, you know, later in recovery, I found out she didn't know what to do with them either. So for the first year that Jill was removed, I spent that time trying to kill myself. I didn't just lose Jill during that period of time. I lost her. I lost my significant other to an overdose. My house was in foreclosure. I had recently accepted drug courts. I had some legal issues going on. And but through that time, I continued to visit her, you know, an hour, 2 hours, whatever, first the courts and then my family would allow me to do. And one thing I knew for sure was that I was never going to give up on her, because my mom never came back for me. My mom dropped me off on my grandparents' doorstep when I was 2 months old, and she never fought for me. She didn't fight for me, and she didn't fight for my brothers. And despite the fact that I was in the same situation myself, I was going to fight for Jill. So again, I visited her and I did all the things I needed to do. And then, I visited her, and when I say I did the things I needed to do, I mean, I showed up, but I was still high. I was using. So eventually, drug court terminated me and they sent me to prison. And while I was in prison, and I was sober for the first time, I was able to start to reflect on those feelings and really feel for the first time the grief and loss of losing my significant other, losing my life, the legal issues, but most importantly, I was able to reflect on losing Jill. And the pain that I felt during that time was immeasurable. And I would talk to her on the phone, and she would say things like, "Mommy, why can't I just tell the judge that I want to come home? And why can't we just be together?" At the time, she was five and six. We both had this image in our head that the day that I got home from prison, she would run to my arms and we would ride off on a noble steed into the sunset. I remember her telling me at one point, again, she was little, and she told me, she came to visit me one day. It was family day at the prison, a great time, right? In my blues with my big jeans on that didn't fit, my scrub top. And she came in and she said, "Mommy, a long time ago, I was in heaven with Jesus." That's what she said. She said, "I was in heaven with Jesus and he let me flip through a book of all the mommies in the world. He said I could choose anyone. I could pick any mommy. And I chose you." And, you know, I remember the guard heard it. And after Jill left, the guard came up to me and she was like, "Oh my God, like, where did that come from? That was so powerful. This little girl, this little ball of fire." So anyway, so I got out of prison and, you know, this is where the parenting and recovery, you know, you just don't know what it's, the wreckage of our past is there. And it didn't go the way I expected, you know. I got home from prison. It was COVID, you know, prime COVID. It was April 7th, 2020. So literally just started. And so it was my family that had my daughter, but it was not a good relationship. It was not a good place to be. And I remember, you know, all the excuses for why Jill couldn't see me, why I couldn't see her, COVID, exposure, all these different things, trauma. They talked about, you know, what's the word, you know, like, not retreating, regression, right? Regression from seeing it. We need to ease into it. We started with FaceTime calls, and that was hard. She was just a little girl at the time. And I'm sorry, my nose is like running and I'm like sniffling. I apologize for that. You know, I got out of prison and at that time I was already a year clean. See, I started using in the prison initially when I got there, because when they said 4 years, I heard life forever. So I went to, and I had never been to prison before. And so when I got there, I was like, "Fuck it, give me all the bupes, the bop bop is what they called it there." And then at some point I had like a spiritual awakening, you know, and that's a whole other story. I'm not going to get into it because I want to focus really on parenting. But I had a spiritual awakening and I stopped using June 1st, 2019. So I was already a year clean and I'm ready to like take off. Like I'm ready. Okay, what do I got to do to get her back? What do I got to do? And it was the most strenuous process I've ever been through in my whole life. The first 2 years, the first 3 years really that I was in recovery were really, really difficult. Actually, the second year clean was the hardest year that I ever had. You know, I was put in a situation where, like, those of you who have had your kids removed, you know, you know, like, nothing I say holds any value. You know, I'm not allowed to be a part of any decision making, from school to summer camp to what she's going to wear today, how she's going to do her hair, none of it. You know, and Jill knew that. You know, she was a little girl and she was being told during that process, "Mommy's not good enough. She's not fit enough. You're not allowed to get in her car. You're not allowed to go home with her." So during this time, my child, and this is what I've just reflected on this week, guys. So, like, this is a new revelation for me. This is not something I've known the whole time, okay? This is a new revelation. All this time, my child is hearing all these things and slowly but surely being told not to trust me, you know? So, like I said, you know, that second year I spent having those visits and it was gradual, 1 hour to 2 hours. Then you can come to swim lessons. And finally I could take her to McDonald's. And then, you know, and during that time I got pregnant with another child. And I didn't realize at the time that those two things were going to overlap. You know, Mia was born May 18th. 2021, and Jill came home for, she came home for her first weekend, her first overnight, that same weekend. So Mia was 3 days old and Jill came home. Now listen, what they don't talk about often, what people don't talk about, is the trauma of reunification. Okay. Because what happens is Jill has this idea that she's coming home to the mom that she remembers. The one who let her eat Nutella sandwiches at 3 a.m. because I'm fucking high. You know what I mean? I think I'm getting back this little girl who's 4 and a half still. Right? She's 4 and a half. She's cuddly. She's giggly. I could do no wrong in her eyes. And, you know, she was poisoned, you know, with ideas about me. Some of them true, some of them not, you know. And she came back a little girl with new experiences that I wasn't a part of. And, you know, one thing that I've really reflected on recently is, like, she's going to be 5 in May. And when Mia does something, I can usually tell exactly where that came from, right? Like, she learned this here, so she's acting it here. She's saying this here because she heard it here, whatever the case may be, because I'm watching her slowly progress. But 3.5 years were stolen from Jill and I, some of which I gave away. And I still accept through working the steps, like, I have had a lot of resentments for the justice system, the judge, CPS, all these different people, and I have really worked through those things. But still to this day, I believe I did give some of that away because I was using, but some of it was stolen from us, okay? Because Jill was kept from me way longer than she needed to be. So I can see those things in Mia and in Jill when she would do things, act a certain way, I would have to be like, where is this coming from? You know, I don't know. I'm missing a large piece of the story. You know what I mean? And it was really hard. She came home. When she left, she was an only child. I had a different boyfriend at the time who she thought was her dad. Life looked totally different. We had a different dog. We had a different house. I mean, whatever. She came home. She had a new sister, a new father, a new life. And a new me. And that was really hard for us. And truthfully, it's still hard. It's still hard for us. There's a lot of trauma that comes with separation, guys. One of those things is, like, today, I still don't know how to discipline her. And I'm afraid to discipline her. You know... This week, actually, Monday was like a day. I got these new glasses, and like they're stronger than they were before. So I was having a hard time. My kids were arguing because they don't like each other. They do, but they don't. They really don't more than they do, actually. And I really could have just drug her ass across the room from her fucking smart ass mouth, dude. And I was seeing red. You know, I'm like, God, I could just, she's 12 now. Okay. She's been home for 5 years. She's 12 now and she's got a smart ass mouth. And I'm afraid to say things that'll hurt her. I'm afraid to put my hands on her. Because I'm afraid that somebody's going to take her from me again and that, like, my actions are not going to be suitable in someone's eyes. You know, I remember when Jill first came home, I wanted to sleep with her so bad. I wanted to hold her so tight. I know that's all she wanted. But I was told, you can't sleep with her, Christina. Like, literally, they were like, you can't let her sleep in your bed. She's going to want to. And you can't let her sleep with you because she's going to regress. So for months, she wanted to sleep in her. It was a new house. She had never been there before. She wanted to sleep in my bed. She was 7. And she would come out and she would sleep on the couch because she would make it halfway to my room. And she knew that if she came in my room, I was going to sternly tell her that she had to go back to her room. I, like, was afraid to coddle her too much. I was afraid to love her too much because I didn't want anyone to think that I wasn't capable of being a fit mother. So, like, I don't want to show any weakness. You know, you got to clean your room. You can't sleep with us. You got to do this. You got to do that. Camps. I remember being told you're only allowed to get her one want, one need, and one read for Christmas. You know, like all these stringent rules that, like, formed me into this person that was, like, incapable of, like, embracing the fact that she was home because it was made to be, like, such a thing. You know, it was, like, such a thing for a long time. And now we're here 5 years later, and, like, it's still a thing. You know, Jill did some shit this week that I haven't shared with my husband, who's here. And, you know, I saw some shit in her phone this week, and I had to have a conversation with her about it. And it's, you know, I had to have a conversation with her about it. And I also, so I work professionally. I know I shouldn't bring this into it, but I work in a professional capacity to help people like us. More specifically, to help parents navigate the child welfare system and avoid separation or navigate separation. So I recently testified for a bill. And it was about knowing your rights as a parent. And so I had just gotten done this like very emotional like reflection of the day that Jill was taken from me. And I had this information, and I reached out to a mom of her friend, and I asked her to like dig into her kid about what she knows about this particular situation. And the mom texted me back while I was providing this testimony, and I realized I need to have a conversation with Jill about some decisions that she's making. She came home, and I also just finished step 8 about making amends. And I don't mean to jump around, but when I was doing step 8, I remember telling my sponsor, because I listened, and Jill was on there, of course, and I have apologized to her. Don't get me wrong. Like, I've had apologies, but they were less emotional, you know? There was less recognition about exactly what she had been through, you know? So Jill was on my list, and I told my sponsor, Aaron, I said, I don't really feel like I need to go out of my way to make an amends to Jill because I already really have. Do you know what I mean? Like, several times. So, like, I'll just keep making amends by, like, not getting high, you know? And she was like, yeah, I mean, like, if it comes up again, you might have to keep having conversations as she gets older and remembers different things and more feelings come out, whatever. So, anyway, fast forward, testimony, conversation. And I sat Jill down, and I wanted to be gentle with her because I wanted her to know that, like, I've been there and I get it. And I said to her when she sat down, I said, you know, Jill, you could talk to me about these things. Like, I would love if you had real conversations with me instead of just, like, I'm hungry, this, that. Like, it's very surface, you know. Some of that is age. Some of it is how we progress to get here, you know. And I just started crying, and I just told her, I said, you know, Jill, that must have been so hard for you to be told for all that time that I wasn't good enough to be your mom, and coming home and being so confused about this role transition, and that, like, you should respect me right off the bat. Like, that must have been so fucking hard, and I'm sorry. And I cried, and she was tearing up, and I said, you know, I'm not as far removed from high school as you think I am. I'm not, you know. My grandparents raised me, and they were 3 generations removed and different country, you know. Like, they were Italian. They're still alive. They are Italian, broken English, and I didn't have anyone to consult with when I was growing up about, like, what should I do? Boy, friend, drugs, this, that, whatever. I didn't have anyone to consult with. I just kind of went with it. Took advice from some parents, you know, different things, but, like, she has someone who understands. Like, I was there not that long ago, 15 years, you know, I get it, and, like, you can, I promise, like, you can talk to me, and I won't judge you. Like, we can work through this together. And and then I took her phone, and she's like, but can I still talk to him? No, you can't still talk to him. Anyway, the point of the story is this. Well, let me go back a little bit and tell you a little bit more about what we did in recovery to make this work. So, like, I exposed Jill to my addiction, and for those reasons, and also because I needed to stay clean, I exposed her to my recovery a lot. I took her to meetings when she first came home. My husband reminded me last night, because I was trying to get everyone to tell my story for me, because I couldn't. And, you know, we created 2 separate home groups to accommodate our kids being there, both Mia and Jill, because you know, my home group at the time, like, you know, like your kid cries and they're, and people are like, you know, like I can't hear the message. And I'm like, okay. And this is the message. No. So we created two home groups for this. You know, we created two home groups that loved our children, not just our children, but our friends' children. They loved our children. We passed Mia around. You know, I remember Jill writing on the whiteboard at one of the places, like, God, what did she write? Something inspirational. I took a picture of it. And the place decided to leave it there. She was like, come to Narcotics Anonymous and get hope or something. Like, she was into it. You know, I've even brought her to events with me, and she's passed out Narcan. She even taught someone how to use Narcan, which actually is fitting because in my active addiction, and these are the things, right? You know, in my active addiction, I taught Jill how to use Narcan to save my life so that she wouldn't be alone. And I thought at that time, this is the better of the two options, right? Like, I'm getting ready to do this hit. It's probably a little bigger than it needs to be. I could fall out, but if I teach my four-year-old how to use Narcan, she won't be alone because she'll save my life. Just trusting that my four-year-old understands what the fuck I'm saying to her in this moment, you know? Now, I haven't told her that. She thinks she just recently learned how to use Narcan. She's actually known for a while. She never had to use it on me, by the way, but, you know, so she's been to events with us, and we expose our children to recovery. She also knows what I do, and she loves what I do. You know, she loves that I help people. She likes to donate her clothes to parents that need clothes for their children. When she was littler, she donated toys. She really gets it. And the truth is, just kind of tying it back, I also have probably just 2 minutes left. I don't know what the fuck I'm doing, guys. Like, that's the God's honest truth. And some days, the only thing I do to make sure I'm a good parent is not fucking use and not fucking act out on my, you know, everything turning red and wanting to drag her across the floor because she said something smart. Just not acting on those things, I'm doing what's right for my kids. And the rest of it, I just wing it. You know, these days I acknowledge what she's been through. I acknowledge what I've been through. I know that I can be a little bit more gentle with her because of what she's been through. But also, I gotta teach her, still teach her to respect me. And that's it. I don't know what to do. But what I do know is, another thing that I do know, because I already said that, is that this program helped carry me and teach me how to be a mother. I had no fucking clue what I was doing. And when I first got Jill back, it was only 3 days into her being back, and we were at a meeting with her. You know? This program taught me how to be a mother, a good mother, a mother in recovery. My friends taught me how to be a good mother in recovery. I take cues from other people that are doing the same thing I'm doing, and I just fucking stay clean and keep showing up to my home group and showing up for them, and that's all I can do. So that's all I have. Thanks for letting me share.
I would like to introduce our second speaker, Todd.
Oh. I'm Todd, I'm an addict. I'm an addict, parent in recovery. I was fortunate, I guess, that I didn't have kids until after I got clean. I wasn't emotional until I heard everything Christina said, and I was like, God bless. Like, I'm going to be snotty and all teary up here, but, like, that's the truth of, like, who I am today. You know, I've caused myself and others a lot of harm, like, running from my emotions. And that, you know, being honest is, you know, it's how I get my help, and it's how I can return the help, you know, to the people around me and not, like, live in the triangle all the time. But, like, she reminded me, like, you know, I'm the father of a 17-year-old girl, a 15-year-old boy, and a 9-year-old girl, right? Only the youngest is my biological, but, like, I don't even use the term like step parent. I never have. Like they've always, I've just always been. Well, for first I was like Todd, and then I was Toddy, then I was super Toddy, and then like eventually I became Dad. And you know, it just I collect myself. This is surreal. But yeah, like that whole journey, it hasn't always been like the present day. Like when I look at my kids and what I think of, like the resentment and this like love hate that I have with the teenage daughter, because she's like a whirlwind and all. It's weird because she has me like wrapped around her finger and has since day one. Like I love this kid on sight. She was five when my wife and I met. You know, she came with two, and then we had our 9-year-old little recovery baby together, who coincidentally, like, she'll, you know, the one that we like cared for the most from conception to life is insane. And like the older two are like little gems. It's like makes no sense. She's, you know, it's not my story to tell, but like they were not born like clean, and they're the best kids. And then like our little recovery child is just like, man, she's something. It's like the nice like parenting way of saying it, right? And you know, but I'll try to get into you know, first thanks Alyssa for asking me to come out. When she asked me after what I just shared, I was like, were you listening? Like, did you hear what I just shared? Because it was largely about like me being like sexist and objectifying women and like growing up that way, and now having this teenage girl, and it's like, like, do you want anybody treating her like that? Like, hell no, you don't. So you better like do better, right? And I've always thought like that, but like now her, you know, being grown and looking grown and just recently learning that she's doing grown-up things, it's been a lot, dude. And it's just like something I feared, like, and like would turn my gut. Like when I would discover things in the phone at 12, it's funny, this is the same age, I remember it like turning my gut and thinking like, I can't face any more than this. It'll be impossible. I'll be incarcerated or in some way institutionalized if this kid grows up anymore. Like, I can't handle this. And my boy, just that, my boy, like every girl that looked at him every time he like flexed and just like became, built this little ego, like he's a good looking kid, and he's, you know, he's like 15, he's like 6'1", he plays all the sports, like he gets all the girls and does all the things, and I was always like, my man, my man. But now it's funny because recovery time to time will show me that like I'm handling things a little better than I thought I would, and lo and behold, like he's the one giving me, like I'm more upset with him when I thought I would be like just as a man to man supportive of him. Like acting like this, I'm not. It doesn't sit right with me at all. It's been like multiple people in a matter of months. And I'm like, what in the hell? You know, and it's more than just like this like teenage jealousy, because my life was not like that. But, and then the girl, she's like, yeah, and like, it's not a thing. Like, you know, I've always like, I didn't even know if I was meaning it. I just remember telling her, like, I don't want to step on your toes. Like, I don't want to, like, impede on your process. Like, romantically, whatever your love life is going to be, all I care about is that, like, you're safe and that you're, like, respected. And she carries it like that. You know what I mean? She's good. I mean, the boy, we're going to have to reel him in. Like, he gets his phone taken on a regular basis. He can't keep it for long, actually, because every time he does, he just runs off on this little, like, ladies' man tangent, and she takes his phone again. But, like, I'll just, you know, some of you don't know my story. Actually, most of you don't, right? But I grew up in a broken home. It's all I've ever known. I'm pretty sure my dad was, like, with my stepmom before I was even born, or soon thereafter. All I've ever known was, like, a separated home. And so I grew up living with my mom. I have an older brother and a younger sister. My older brother was always like very good at being very critical of our parents. So I always felt just inherently like I was the one that was supposed to be nice to them. So even though my mom was like bringing home men at night and like making me, I'm going to be this vulnerable for the sake of like feeling like it's God's will that I should. But I remember like laying in bed one night and she was had come home from the bar or whatever. Middle school was a real rough time. I remember my younger sister's dad had died or left by this point, and new stepdad wasn't there yet. Middle school was rough, dude. Like, don't know where the child support was going, but we never had, like, school clothes and shoes and all that shit, and there was multiple men coming through the house on a regular basis. And I remember just one time, like, hearing her, like, kissing this guy in the living room, and my room was the first one in the hallway, and just, like, crying. And I didn't know why I was crying, but I just felt like I wasn't, I didn't matter. I was like, all she ever cares about is, like, these dudes. And I'll get to why that's important, because, you know, how it took this, I'm on my second round of steps now, and it's taken this second round to, like, really look at myself after feeling like my first round was a little surface level, or it was as good as I thought I was doing my best at the time, but, like, the best of my ability, you know, I got 12 years clean, so, like, my best of my ability then wasn't what it is now. And I look at it deeper, and I'm like, man, that and, like, my first love cheating on me and, like, breaking my heart really shaped, like, how critical I am of women. Which didn't help that, like, I spent every other weekend, maybe, like, one weekend a month with my dad, who taught me that, like, that being critical of people, being critical of women was, like, an asset. Like, that's how you get people to shut up and do what you want, or at least shut up and stop saying things that you don't want to hear. You just have to be loud and aggressive, and you can scare them. She's like, yeah, right, not a chance. you know, it's, yeah, that's not my life. But it was all I knew, right? You just don't know what you don't know. And I'm, like, bouncing around, but, like, that's what I learned. It was, like, if someone's saying something that, like, makes you uncomfortable, just be loud and aggressive, and they'll shut up. You just have to be louder and, like, scare them. If that means throwing a pack of, like, one of my core memories is him just standing up and just, like, Nolan Ryan winging this, like, pack of cheese at my stepmom and hitting her with it, and, like, her crying about it in the kitchen while him and my three brothers and I all, like, laughed about it on the couch. Like, that's my core memories of, like, the guy that taught or was supposed to teach me how to be that. So, I guess, you know, and then throughout using, it just didn't help. I, you know, thought that using, you know, is going to make me feel better, it's going to fix me. I thought the Marine Corps was going to fix me. It didn't. Like, I thought I had the answers. Like, when I went in the Marines at 17, I was like, damn, like, I'm way behind the curve, but I have all these, like, super strong, aggressive, respected men in my life, and they'll teach me. And they did, like, teach me a lot of, like, accountability and things like this. I'm going to start losing track of time, Melissa. I hope you got those cards ready. You know, but it doesn't always apply. Like, accountability is important. Discipline is important. But they don't supersede, like, love and compassion and all the things that I didn't get and didn't know how to give. Until, you know, that's why I'm grateful. Like, if my heart goes out to, like, someone who went through life and using life before recovery and being a parent, like, I can't imagine. I would have been a monster. I would have never kept kids, you know. But luckily I have, like, all of you. And, like, this is where I've learned to be a parent. I don't look anywhere else. All the guys, you know, my man Luke and everybody's been, like, showing up for me. You know, we all came up together. Only one was a parent. We were like, oh, that's kind of crazy. The dude's got a kid. And now we're like, every single one of us has, like, multiple children, I think, now. And they all stayed clean. I fell ass backwards into, like, a really solid network because I heard someone, and I always, like, leave people with this. Like, if you just, if you want this, you know, whether you got 12 minutes or 12 days or no minutes clean right now, like, get around people who clearly want it too, and, like, probably nobody else because the rest of them, like, won't be around for long. And I did that to stay clean, and I'm doing it to, like, be a parent. Like, I don't take any cues from any of the men in my family. I'm not talking down on them, but I'm not listening to anyone, like, in my bloodline on how to be a father. You know, or a partner. You know, that reading from The Living Clean, thank you a million times, thank you. Like, it talks about how, like, being a parent is a relationship. you know? And, hell, it's just, like when my stomach was turning on the drive down here, I've shared this meeting in my truck on the way to work a dozen times. I've shared some killer meetings in the shower over the last, like, couple months. I've been nailed it. I'm like, I'm so ready for this. I'm going to knock the socks off of these people. And, like, this morning I woke up, and it wouldn't be like a parenting and recovery life if we weren't like rushing out the door. I was like, all I fucking wanted was to be there hours early so I wouldn't be anxious and stressed out about being, you know, late. We got here 45 minutes early. It was fine. But like, that is life today. I'm never ever leaving and running like some smooth schedule. Like, it's always, always like a little bit stressful. But how stressful it is, and I hate that this is true, how stressful like our household is, and how much like my wife and my kids have to like walk on eggshells, largely depends on like how I'm nurturing like my spiritual condition. I wish it wasn't so, but it just fucking is. So it's, you know, I have to do good. Like, I like tangible, like little, like physical things. Like when I'm speeding, I have a very heavy foot. Like when I'm, if I'm hitting like 80 plus on the express lane, and I'm like, Todd, chill. Like, you're not even late. You're plenty early, and you have a family at home who's like counting on you to make good choices. If you spin out right now, you're not walking away from it. Slow down. Like, that's, I say that because like that's the one that comes to mind. I live in Bel Air. I work in the city, and I travel that, you know, 5 to 6, 7 times a week. And it's, you know, but we do as parents, like we have, you know, or maybe you don't have your kids back in your life yet, but like eventually they'll be counting on you to make good choices. And that is what I'm glad you talked about. Cause all I was like, parenting, what does it mean to me when I think of them and I picture them? Like when we left the house this morning, the little teenager who just like, you know, what we call loafing. She's either at school on this one spot on the couch on her phone with a blanket up to here. And she only like talks to me when she needs something or wants something. But like, that's the luxurious, the life they have today. They're completely provided for. And like, I love that for them, but it is like a large source of resentment depending on like how my perspective is that day. My favorite line from our literature is always, and always will be probably, so simple, like, just for today, I will try to get a bit better perspective on my life. Because all of my like shitty behavior or good behavior stems from like how my perspective is that day. And mostly, I'm around them. You know, I got coworkers. I'm a workaholic these days. So, like, it's easy to be, like, comparing myself to the level of my blue-collar coworkers and being like, I'm a way fucking better father and husband than, like, 80% of these guys. I'm doing just fine. But then I come home, you know, to a woman who, like, visionally, like, works steps, visionally works a program, sponsors, be sponsored, like, does all the things. And I'm like, oh, I'm a total piece of shit. You know, but, like, it's, I've learned, you know, we all have our areas. I'm never going to compare myself to a mother slash wife, whatever, in recovery. I'm not going to stack up. That's not a healthy, like, realistic thing for me to try to, like, be. It's just not. But what I can be, like, is the dad who's more than just accountability and discipline. Like, I want them, you know, like we always say, like, people may not remember your name, but, like, they'll remember how you made them feel. And it's been told to me, but especially by the girls. You know, me and the boy, like, I walk in every day, he's like, Father, what's up? Dads me up, goes back upstairs or out to play, whatever he's doing. And the girls are like, they're like cats. Like, you know, I want to walk in from a 13-hour day at the very, you know, good career that I have now from, like, taking suggestions around this place. Like, we have, you know, a pretty good life. And I want them to look around and be like, look how hard that works for everything we have. But, like, it's almost 99.9% of the time is not the case. Like, that, and it's not, I don't think that they don't appreciate me or never will, but in a lot of moments, that's what it feels like. I'm like, you don't fucking care at all. Like, how hard your mother and I work. Their lives are exponentially better than what her and I grew up with, just from everything we've shared. And I don't know how much time I have left, but would you talk to, you know, it wasn't always like this. Like, in the beginning, and it's not, like, it's more her story to tell, but I was there, so it's kind of my story to tell, too, is that, like, we were separated. Like, the older two were still in foster care there, or with their godmother. They were, like, you know, 5, 6, and the boy was, like, 4. And we were getting them for no visits, and then we were getting them for a supervised hour, and then it was like a supervised couple hours and a couple a day. Maybe we can take them to the park, but we have to be back by 4 p.m. It's 1:30, like we can't go far. All of those things, and you know, and then dropping them off and being like, oh, do you have to drop us off? And then getting like the weekends, and the more time we got with them, the harder it was to take them back. And I just remember like building a lot of faith in that time, being like someday this will be, you know, what we hope it will be. And then it was. But that was like a. I really wish you'd let me bring my drink up here because my mouth is dry. But like, thank you. She's like, stop drinking so much caffeine. It's gonna give you make your anxiety worse. And no, I was talking about my other drink. As I was saying, it eventually became, you know, through God's will, like just lots of prayer, a good bit of money for lawyers, and like. More of God's will and lots of praying and like just staying in position, doing the next right thing, doing all that we knew that had gotten our lives good thus far, did the same for, you know, our kids. And eventually after a couple of years, they did come back to be with us. And I remember being like, the system's going to come and check and make sure we have everything we're supposed to do. How the fuck are we supposed to come up with $200 a piece? It's like for their beds. And now, like, the kid's got, like, a sleep number bed. The other one's like, I want a sleep number bed, too. And, like, I'm like, you know, we've come so far. But, like, that's been the sum of, like, my last, I don't know, give or take 5 years. I started working for the power company, and everything since I did, I started being, like, what I can do best is, like, work. You know, it's easy to be at work. Being a stay-at-work dad is the easiest gig on earth. And I really thought that it would fix damn near everything. But I didn't really, like, I'm putting everything else on her. I'm not, she's like, bringing home a fat paycheck or a paycheck is like, it's not enough. I'm sorry, you think it is, but it's not. Like, I need you emotionally. If the kids are draining me all day, like, who's helping fill my cup, right? And she's like, you know, the truth is I could come home, and when I don't get that big ass, like, you know, greeting I want, everybody just bowing to me and telling me how appreciative they are, it's just like I come home and I'm just draining her cup more. You know what I mean? So like it's like having a 30 something year old child. So I knew soon enough that I didn't want to be that guy either. And it's just a constant, like, steady work of, like, balance of trying to be all the things to everyone, but not, like, losing myself like I did, you know. The last couple of years, this is what I meant by when Alyssa asked me. I was like, she has no fucking clue, like, how shitty of a parent that I've been, how shitty of a, like, husband I've been. It has not been, like, any kind of rose garden by any means. Like, I love them all a ton, but every step of the way has come with, like, a good bit of pain and then me feeling compelled to, like, do the work to overcome that pain. Thank you. And, you know, that I don't think that cycle will ever end. I'd love to think that one day I'll be just like this kind of, like, pragmatist, like my sponsor, just, like, stays ahead of and just stays in the solution all the time. There's, you know, there's hope. I would have, like, Luke and I were talking about before this, maybe it's Steven and I, was, like, I dreamed of being the guy that I am now. And I still feel super inadequate a lot of days. Still feel like I fall short way more than I rise to the level of, like, what I wanted to be. You know, but that's the kind of, that's where grace comes in. I put, like, a few things in my notes app. And one of them, like, the biggest thing, and I put it, like, in, like, 4 times size font, was, like, grace. because that's where I fall short the most in allowing myself grace and being like, stop expecting like this much. Like, you're a human, right? You're a human with defects, but there's hope because you're a human who like is actually aware of and acknowledging and working on the defects, right? But like, don't rest on that either. It's all like this crazy little like juggling act, balancing game. And you know, that balancing game, that act gets a lot easier the more vigilant I work a program. And coincidentally, when I let off of my program, I'm like, I'm just going to my home group. I'm working 12 hours a day. As long as I give her, you know, the check looks like this, everything else should work itself out. That's just not the fucking case. I wish it was, you know, but it's not. So there's a lot more to like parenting and being parented. Like, I don't, you know, my mom, you know, my wife just lost her father on last Sunday, and she's the first of us to lose a parent. And it was like, rough. It's been rough. And while we can look at a lot of the gratitude and being like, our kids will be left in a much, much better position. Like, we always joke, like bills and bullshit. It's pretty much all our parents are leaving us with when they leave this earth. But, you know, it will not be like that for our children. We're on many, many levels breaking like a lot of generational like trauma. And just like defects and shortcoming is what I'm learning. Like, I don't fault my parents like for how they acted, like the dad just being like distant, you know, aggressive, but like also having a sense of humor. I chalked that up to him. But they don't know what they don't know. Like, I believe if you ask my parents, they'd probably say they did the best they could with what they had. And probably it would be mostly true, but they still felt super way short. But they didn't have what we have, you know what I mean? Like, they didn't have a network of, like, people who were legitimately, like, trying to better themselves, you know, on a regular basis and, like, learning, like, the principles and the step work. I didn't really get into it, but, like, yeah, I'm on my second round of steps now. I'm on my second, third step. And, like, the grace, the compassion, the patience, all of it. Like, learning to, like, give myself a break, how much that overflowed into my kids. And I thought it was just, like, this minuscule little thing. I did. And then the way that my teenage daughter, like, started responding back to me after we had been, like, all but, like, didn't speak for the better part of a year, I overreacted a lot to her, like, getting into relationships and boys and stuff. Like, I took her phone and, like, broke it against the desk. And I'm like, you have 11, 12 years clean. Like, what the fuck are you doing? Destroying her property. Like, this is not who you want to be. But it's the whole truth of, like, who I am. And I can't get better if I don't share. And, you know, I've always been a big advocate for, like, sharing the whole message. Like, I could give you the highlight reel and show you how, you know, me and that same daughter won a big victory. Yeah, my wife always said, like, you know, she was about to get her license. I'm like, yeah. You know, like, she's like, she's not getting a nice car. She's not getting anything great for, like, her first car. And I'm like, we'll see about that. We have a saying in our house, like, Princess Pumpkin wants, Princess Pumpkin gets. And, you know, she's my baby. I love this kid. I've loved her since day one. She was, like, everything sweet and lovable about my wife without any of the, like, things that made me, like, that she had done to make me resent her. And it's just, you know, I was like, the fact, God, this kid is gold. You know, and I still feel it. I still believe it. When I look at her, you know, the youngest is my only biological, so I'm just inherently, like, a little more protective of her. Like, when they start getting on her, and I'm like, hey, stop, you know, being mean to my baby. You know, but, like, because that's the whole truth. But she's a whole asshole. So, and, you know, but, yeah, we won a big victory. You know, long story short, Princess Pumpkin got a brand new car for her 16th birthday. And made me a very, as I always leave them with, you know, if nothing else, I'm like, you make me a very, very proud daddo. And, none of it would be possible if I just didn't, like, keep showing up here and taking the suggestions and doing all the things that we learn how to do. None of it came from here. It all came from, you know, all of you and my higher power. And I will absolutely keep coming back. Thanks for letting me share.